Jokic behind his back. What a take by Jokic.
That's your sitter. Wow.
As long as their fans don't get disappointed, that's all I care about. So the Warrior fans can come in here. The Celtics fans can come in here. The Laker fans can come in here. But take that L on the way out.
Jokic. Harris goes again.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the Pickaxe Pundit Show. I am Zach Nikosh with DenverStiffs.com. You are listening to the Denver Stiffs Podcast Network. It is Tuesday, December 18th, here in the Mile High City. Game day. Nuggets got a game tonight against the Dallas Mavericks. I'm recording this actually here this morning on Tuesday. We've had a crazy busy week. It's been tough for me. It's been tough for everybody at the Stiffs. We're all right, I think, in the holidays, just really trying to get through it all. But anyway, so I might be a little bit distracted. A, I got to do this thing solo because we've only got about a half hour of time, and nobody's got time to record a podcast this at this point in the day. So I'm just gonna go ahead and take care of it for you guys and get it done. But I'm chasing something right now. It's funny, you guys won't get to hear this, unfortunately, because it's the art of podcasting is not live. But we are currently, myself, Mr. Vo, and Mr. Mares, trying to confirm. We show Jared Vanderbilt as listed as a game time decision for tonight's game against the Dallas Mavericks. That's, of course, huge news. And with Juancho Hernan Gomez also listed as a game time decision with an abdominal strain, you could potentially see Jared Vanderbilt getting minutes. And we know he's been fairly close. Malone made a comment a few days ago, I believe. I think it was at practice, maybe. He said that he was getting close. We saw Vanderbilt kind of looking like he was participating in practice. So I don't know. We're trying to confirm. Maybe as you guys keep on listening, I might, as I get into the show, you might already know by the time you listen to the show, but it's kind of hard to do breaking news on a podcast. But yeah, I'll keep following that. So I apologize if I somewhat sound distracted or if you hear the click clack of my keyboard as we chase that down, try and get an answer on that. Otherwise, we do have a couple of things to go through on the show. Of course, back-to-back wins for the Denver Nuggets. They beat the Oklahoma City Thunder. Follow that up with a win over the Toronto Raptors. Two very impressive wins that is going to can keep them up in the first seed in the Western Conference. A little bit of side stories there, particularly with Russell Westbrook. And, of course, how that game ended with a little bit of a dust-up between Westbrook, Murray, and then Nikola Jokic. Had some choice words Westbrook did for Nikola there. We won't repeat because we're a family podcast. I want to get into that, though. I want to talk about Russell Westbrook specifically and kind of his role in Nuggets fandom. And then also I want to talk the other side of that matchup. Torrey Craig played really well in that Oklahoma City game, played really well against Russell Westbrook once again. Also seems to maybe have started to get something going on the offensive end, which, of course, if you get that out of Torrey Craig, if he can just be a guy who can hit three-pointers, that changes a lot for the Nuggets. So I'll talk a little bit about Torrey Craig. We'll also want to get into that Toronto game, of course. The Toronto game is one of those games where I was kind of concerned because the Nuggets, of course, went up to Toronto just a couple weeks ago, got the victory up there. They've got the best record in the NBA. It was a big news. You know, Nuggets knocked them off. You figure there's a pretty big chip on their shoulder. But then they come in. You know, they don't have Kyle Lowry. They don't have Pascal Siakam. They don't have Fred VanVleet. So they were very, very much so hampered. I mean, not that the Nuggets aren't, so it's not really an excuse by any means for Toronto. But you were concerned, or not as concerned once you heard that, because you figured, okay, at least we're back to an even playing field again with these two teams and the injuries. Nuggets get the win. It was a resilient win, though, on that one, and I really want to talk about that, especially Jamal Murray and his resilience in the game and kind of how he went with the flow of the game and ultimately ended up being the difference for Denver and getting that win. The other guy who is, of course, the big difference and has been all week, has been all month, is Nikola Jokic. He's been He's been basically the guiding force. We're starting to see a little bit of MVP discussion around Nikola, so we'll discuss that to wrap up kind of our recap of the week, and then we'll look forward, as we always do. Like I said, we're going to talk about that Denver game tonight against the Dallas Mavericks and what's going on with that. It's the first time we've seen the Mavericks this year. They are another one of these surprise teams in the West that a lot of people didn't think would make be in contention for the playoffs, but are, and are kind of making the playoff picture even more muddled out West than people anticipated. They are, of course, led by leading rookie of the year candidate Luka Doncic. Anybody who's been following me knows that I'm a pretty big Luka Doncic booster. So we'll definitely be talking about Luka and the Mavericks and whether or not they're real, you know, whether or not this start by them is something to be trusted. An interesting upcoming week, two teams for the Nuggets, only two games here, but they've got the Mavericks tonight, a team who's on the surprise, and then the Clippers, on Saturday, another team who's been a lot of people expected to kind of fall off and has actually been quite good. So really an interesting kind of interesting stuff to get there. We'll talk about Wancho being out, maybe Jared Vanderbilt being in, and then, you know, and like I said, we'll get into both of these two teams and kind of their upstart years. And I think that'll wrap up the show. We won't make it too long, because I know listening to me by myself just drone on is can be more difficult than most people want to endure. So we will not put you guys through that. In fact, let's dive right in. Let's wrapping up that week. Let's talk about Russell Westbrook, right? If everybody saw the kind of tussle there at the end, Westbrook pushes Jamal Murray. Jamal Murray kind of pushes back. There's this sort of dust up or whatever, and then Jokic steps in the way, and then Westbrook basically telling him, "I'm going to F you up." And Jokic just kind of shrugging and giving the okay guy look. It was interesting because it's Westbrook, right? That's the thing, is like this is a guy who at some point we got to start looking at, like, look at the history he has with the Nuggets. Like, what is it? There just seems to be something about the Nuggets that Westbrook really really doesn't like, and I'm not quite sure what it is. But whether you go back to, you go back to the whole thing with, remember when Rocky and he blocks his half court shot, of course. I mean, like, it's just like petty stuff like that. And it makes you wonder, you know, why does he have such a big deal with the Nuggets? I wonder if it goes back all the way to basically, to the playoffs. I think it was his second season in the playoffs that Westbrook played against the Nuggets. They handled Denver fairly easily, another one of those five game series. But I remember Westbrook being quite a bit pretty boisterous, as he was. I think that's really when his villainy with Denver started, at least on our end. When we look at it, I think a lot of fans don't really like Russell Westbrook here in Denver, and I think that really starts with he played extremely well in those playoff in that playoff series against Denver back in 2011, and really we were already a wounded animal because of the whole melodrama, and that thing had come to pass during that season. Then to see this other team kind of have this rising star on top of Kevin Durant, and have him just, you see the way Westbrook plays, he's very emotional on the court, and some people can appreciate that. A lot of people don't, and especially when he's being emotional about putting a licking on your own team in the playoffs. That's especially difficult to deal with. So I think that a lot of people don't like him for that. But then he's followed that up with antic after antic when it comes to Denver. I mean, like I said, there was the Rocky thing. There was the Jokic thing already once, right? It was kind of interesting to see the difference this year, but what was it? Maybe last season in the preseason, I think. Westbrook takes a pretty cheap shot at Jokic, and nobody did anything. They just basically said, all right, and then that was it. This time, he pushes Murray, and I mean, Jokic is pretty much right there, ready to go. If you looked at one of the replays, you could see Wancho was—he almost had a smile on his face about the whole thing. Like, he was like, "Here we go again. This little Russell Westbrook guy is going to try and going to try and mess with us. And it was good to see there was definitely a different response, you know, to his antics by the team. And these guys obviously stood up for each other out. And you know, I mean, Jokic is, look, Russell Westbrook is a very athletic guy and a tough dude. Jokic is like 7 foot tall and does nothing but fight with his Serbian brothers for the past, you know, 20 years. So I just, me personally, I'm taking Jokic in that matchup. But it is what it is. Obviously, Westbrook not going to back down to anybody and not going to back down to the Nuggets. Like I said, there's some sort of thing that I can't quite figure out, but something about them playing Denver that he really doesn't like. Really seems to have made him kind of the enemy of the Nuggets, which the Nuggets have kind of needed. When you think about it, so Kobe Bryant was the enemy of the Nuggets for pretty much the entire Melo years. I mean, the Spurs were a bit of a pain in their side too, but Kobe, because of the success with Lakers, because of the transgression, the altercation, the allegations, whatever you want to call it, in Eagle, there's just the natural role of a villain for the Nuggets, and he always won, right? He always figured out a way to overcome the Denver, which just made you hate him even more. Since he's been gone, though, you know, the Nuggets, of course, that's kind of also coincided with the Nuggets, not obviously directly correlated, but just coincidentally coincided with the Nuggets on their own slide here, and they haven't had this villain. And I don't know that I would call the Oklahoma City Thunder a rivalry kind of on the same level as the way the Nuggets fans felt about Lakers, especially back in the 2000s. But Russell Westbrook himself, I think, certainly fills that villain role that Kobe held in the 90s and in the 2000s. I was trying to think in the 90s who it might have been. The Nuggets were so bad. Their biggest villain was probably Bernie Bickerstaff, to be honest. In the 1990s, that was rough. But I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking as a fan, you know, my mind would go to like a guy like John Stockton, I think, is probably. For some reason, I just really hated John Stockton. Probably because, he was so good and he just, he always seemed to put a licking on the Nuggets, him and Karl Malone. But I digress. Anyways, Russell Westbrook, you know, like I said, he's kind of this new villain thing, and I think it's good. I think it's good for Denver. I think it's good that we saw them have that moxie this time around to be like, hey, dude, we're not gonna take this from you anymore. I also think it's good that they got it in a victory. You know, that's the number one way to win a rivalry is to win the game. So I'm okay with it. I really am. I mean, it's a little bit of a cheap shot there at the end. It's obviously coming out of frustration, and that's, you know, you don't like to see that. You obviously don't want to condone guys taking shots like that, but it is what it is. You know what the funny thing part is? When I was watching that game, I watched it with the Thunder broadcast on, and they thought their conclusion over there, their broadcasting conclusion, was that during that altercation was the only thing that should happen was Jokic should get a technical foul. So that lets you know the level of homerism over there. I'm kind of happy that it, you know, it basically, I don't know if they called the tech on Russ. I didn't really think he needed one. I thought maybe you could give him a fine. And then that would be, I don't know if maybe he did get a fine. It shows you how much up to tune I am with Russell Westbrook and his news. Anyway, so I think that's, let's kind of, you know, the thing that to kind of bring it around to the next subject, the thing that really frustrated, I think, Westbrook the most was Torrey Craig. Torrey Craig really, really had an outstanding sort of two games now this week, both against Oklahoma City and against Toronto. The thing against Oklahoma City that was really impressive, especially, was he really early in that game got his shot going, and we finally got to see Torrey Craig. There was so much talk this offseason from the organization about Torrey Craig and how hard he was working and how good he was looking and how he was just shooting lights out in the gym. And then, you know, both him and another guy, Trey Lyles, there was a lot of talk. And then when they got out there, we just haven't seen it. We haven't seen it on the court. It's really nice to see Torrey kind of put that together in these, because the Nuggets need him. I mean, he's getting these opportunities, you know, because Gary Harris is out, because Will Barton is out. The Denver is thin on the wings. Now Wancho is questionable, so they need Torrey Craig to be not just a grind it out, kind of hustle hard. Yeah, he's got really good, you know, he's a good defender. He puts in a ton of effort on that end. He's pretty much a liability on offense, but we know we can put him out there and put him on a guy like Russell Westbrook, and he can slow him down. Like, that's all well and good. You want that out of him, but because of the fact that you don't have all the weapons that you would normally have on the offensive end, you can't afford to have a guy out there who just simply can't hit shots, you know. So and that's the case that the case was for Torrey Craig for the first month and a half of the season. I mean, he was completely a non-factor to the point that defenses were sagging, you know, 5-6 feet off of him, practically almost in the lane, almost into a what would be a, in the old days, an illegal defense. They're almost double teaming another guy off ball because they're sagging so far off Torrey Craig, and that just completely denied any sort of dribble penetration. It made pick and rolls much more difficult. DHOs much more difficult because that help was always there off of that action, because those guys would be happier to leave Torrey Craig open at the 3-point line than allow the Nuggets to get to the lane or to execute like some of those pick and rolls or those DHOs. And that pretty much made it to the point where our coach had to take him out, right? I mean, coach ended up making the switch, giving Wancho that starting position, and Wancho's held onto it ever since because he's been able to provide that spacing that they need. But Torrey is, you know, now shown not only in that Oklahoma City game, he shot pretty well in the Toronto game, not quite as well as he shot against Oklahoma City, but he still definitely had a game, a good game for them. You know, I think he was 5-for-14 and not particularly great there. That's right around, you know, 40 or so percent. You want to see that a little bit higher, but 3-for-8 from a 3-point line. That's right about league average or right in there, you know. So he wasn't a total liability. He hit some good shots, some big shots there in that game, and he really, if you look at the box score, you know, it's tough. You wouldn't think he did that great against Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi scored 29 points on only 21 shots. He was really the most effective part of that Toronto team. He plus 3 on the game. You know, everything would point to you to, oh, Torrey really didn't do that well against him. But I didn't get that impression watching that game. I thought Torrey really actually defended Kawhi quite well. You know, he's 1-of-6 from 3. He didn't give him that the backbreaker threes. He made him work inside for it, and give Kawhi credit. He's a phenomenal player, a phenomenal finisher around the rim, a great mid-range shooter. You know, he got his shots. He only had 4 free throws, so Craig didn't give him a bunch of and one opportunities, or, you know, didn't put him on the line with silly fouls, even though he ended up with 5 on the game. He really, I thought he played controlled, and Kawhi had a good game, yes, but with the Raptors as injured as they were, they needed Kawhi to have an all-out game, and the Nuggets kept that at bay, and Torrey Craig had a big part of that. So it was really back-to-back games. Not only do we see it on that defensive end against some of the best players there are in the NBA, we also saw it on that offensive end, and if he can continue to do that, then it really gives you a lot of hope, you know, for the Nuggets and their future, at least immediate future, over the next month or so with Gary Harris out. We don't know quite when Will Barton's going to be back yet. We'd assume he'd be closer than Gary. But if you've got Torrey Craig and he's able to be just a 3-and-D guy for you, now suddenly you're saying, okay, you know, we've still got Murray and Jokic to provide the bulk of our offense. We've got Wancho, who can also give us some spacing. And then whether we put in Lyles, we try and, you know, we're going to put in some sort of other guy, whether it's Lyles or we play Beasley and put Wancho at the 4, you know, that we're going to give spacing, or we're going to go with Plumlee and give us another playmaker on offense, another guy so that we can kind of run some actions with that. Then you feel, okay, we've got still a pretty solid base. Our bench is starting to get a little pretty thin. And again, we're still working on this Jared Vanderbilt thing. So, potentially that could be, some help on the way here shortly, but, there's a lot of still potency in that starting lineup, and a good mix of different roles. You know, you got Plumlee and Craig to lead your defense. You've still got Jokic and Murray as your primary offensive threats, with a good secondary action. Like I said, if Craig can be a guy who can be consistent from the corners, if you've got Wancho as another guy to space and also give you a little playmaking from the wings, you've got Mason Plumlee who can, when they decide to take action away from Jokic, you can swing it over to Plumlee and basically just run the same set on the other side of the court. It's workable. It's certainly at least in the short term, and you feel good about that. But if Torrey Craig is just a guy who's not going to be able to shoot at all, well, suddenly now you got two guys in Plumlee and Craig who can't space the floor at all, and you really, as we've seen time and time again, over Nikola Jokic's career, that really, when he's got two guys on the floor who really can't space for him, that really makes it difficult for him to operate and do what the Nuggets want to do. So that's just need Craig to kind of keep it up, and I think they're going to be fine. It'll be interesting to see tonight how he does. He's got another difficult defensive matchup in front of him. But they're gonna once again need him, especially if Wancho's out. They're gonna once again need Torrey to be a huge part of both their defensive side and their offensive side. The other thing, like that we've been saying though, that they've got going for them right now is, of course, they've got Jokic and Murray, right? This is this combo that we haven't seen in a while. From the Nuggets. It's always sort of not even. I don't even want to say we haven't seen it in a while. I mean, we just haven't seen it yet this way. We've known that that Gary Harris and Nikola Jokic have a really good two-man game, right? We've seen that time and again in games. They both really work well with each other and play effective basketball. With Murray and Jokic, I think it's been a lot more of those two guys operating in their own spaces. You know, there have been plays that we obviously all can remember, the give and go from the Sacramento Kings game a few years back, where Murray or Jokic flips it over his shoulder to Murray, and Murray gets that free or that layup that was. It was just a really nice play, but I don't think we've seen so far those two really be an effective two-man game like we're seeing right now, and it's making it very difficult for teams to defend, because the fact of the matter is Jamal Murray, when he is on, is probably every bit of an off, not even probably, he is every bit of an offensive weapon that Jokic is when Murray is on. Now he's a little more, he's not as consistent as Nikola is, but we've seen that when he's got his shot falling, he's got enough moves with his handle to be able to create a separation. He doesn't need much and get shots, and he's really good with the pull up. He's got the floater. He of course can hit the three. We're seeing him work more on that pick and roll with Jokic, and you know, kind of going to a pick and roll, from a pick and roll to a give and go, and that's getting him a lot of good looks near the basket. It's just really hard to defend, because the other option that you have is, okay, so we're going to collapse harder, we're going to hedge hard out on Murray. Well, now you're either A, switching, and you're going to make that guard go one-on-one with Jokic, which the easy thing is, of course, Murray just dumps the ball to Jokic on the roll. He doesn't even – Jokic obviously not a guy who's going to roll that hard to the hoop, but he doesn't even have to. He can simply get the ball. Sometimes you have to use that pick and roll just to get – basically to be a post-entry pass, and then you get it in there against the guard with the switch, and he's got the ability to – Jokic in the post is obviously going to win that matchup every time. Or, you know, he can pop. That's the other thing. If the guy's going to hedge, Jokic can pop. He's now – the height advantage is clearly in his favor. He hasn't been great at from three so far, but the Nuggets don't always necessarily use that pick and pop with Murray and Jokic at the three-point line. You know, it's something that we've seen them use more of to open up a mid-range shot for Joker as well, and he's been quite effective from that range. So it's just these guys, now that they have that going, that like I said, that two-man game, it's become just really difficult for teams to defend, and it's something the Nuggets need, because Jokic has been phenomenal these past, you know, basically, like I said, this whole month, ever since really all these injuries have started mounting. He's been the guy who stepped up and has been, had his all-around game. You know, he's not putting up 40 points a game or something like that, but he is, I think, averaging something like 20 points, 11 rebounds, and over 8 assists now just in this month. So he is certainly being one of the top weapons in the NBA, where, like, some people are starting to talk about him in MVP conversations, because how can you not? You see all of these other guys going down, all of these really solid quality players, three starters, a sixth man you signed in free agency, your first round pick, all these guys aren't there, and yet you are playing the best basketball the team has played in years. You're at the top of a Western Conference. You are right now have a better record than the Golden State Warriors. I mean, Jokic is the guy who's been there the whole time, right? Jokic and Murray. And obviously Jokic is the guy, like I said, he's more consistently been the attacker every night. So that's been, once again, my dogs. Welcome to the show. Jokic has been kind of the, you know, he's there's reason you should have the MVP conversation going on for the Nuggets, because he's even though his stats, you know, like I said, he's not leading the league in scoring, he's not leading the league in assists, I mean, he's not leading the league in rebounds, he's not leading anything, but he's been the constant force on a team who's right now one of the best teams in the NBA. You have to have that, and that's so huge for the Nuggets. This is kind of his moment, right? This is really Jokic's moment to shine with everybody else out. He's the one guy who's gotta keep it going. I'll tell you what, you guys, I'm gonna finish my thought. I have some obviously somebody's at the door here and they want to talk to me, so I will tell you what, let's go ahead, we'll hit the break, and then when we come back we will look forward to the upcoming week in this game tonight.
We've all been there. When the budget's the tightest or a time is the shortest, that's when disaster strikes. The last thing anyone wants to deal with in these times is an electrical issue in their home or business. Maybe your light suddenly won't turn on, or maybe a home inspector wants that electrical service changed before you can close out on a property you're selling. Heck, maybe it's not even an emergency at all and you're just looking to finish out your basement or get some power ran to that new AC unit. Whatever your need may be, give Sun Electrical a call. They're a family-owned and operated business that serves the Front Range, and you can be assured that you'll not only get the highest quality service, but you'll also get the most affordable price as well. Mike, the owner of Sun Electrical, will come to your home or business personally to evaluate your situation and provide a free estimate, and he stands by the work Sun performs as a fully licensed and insured electrical contractor. So give him a call, 719-659-6888. Don't be fooled by the phone number, as they'll serve the entire Front Range from Colorado Springs to Fort Collins and everywhere in between. That's 719-659-6888. 719-659-6888. Sun Electrical, the home of truly affordable electrical work.
Welcome back into the Pickaxe Pundit Show. I'm Zach Minkosh, DenverStiffs.com. We spent the first half of the show breaking down the week that was for the Denver Nuggets. Two big wins, Oklahoma City Thunder and Toronto Raptors. Now Denver prepares for the game tonight. First off, that is against the Dallas Mavericks. And then, of course, they have the game on Saturday against the Los Angeles Clippers when they go back out onto the road, head out to L.A., for that one. When you compare it to last week, it looks a little bit easier, right? Like you maybe take the foot off the gas a little bit. Oklahoma City Thunder and Toronto Raptors are two clear playoff teams. You don't necessarily feel that way about either the Mavericks or the Clippers. Granted, the Clippers now have been, they've been in, you know, solid playoff position the entire season, and we're a third of the way through, so you should probably start taking them seriously as a playoff team. Of course, though, with the way the NBA standings are, it's really hard to take anybody right as a playoff team, just because you know that, well, one if they go on have one downturn there, they might be on the outside looking in. Because I mean, you know, you could say same thing about the Mavericks. They've got a winning record. They've been in the playoff picture or around it the entire season, so you could make the same claim about them that you should probably take them as legit. The thing about the Mavericks right now is that they're two games back of being in 13th place, so it's a little bit different than a team like the Thunder, who's 19-10 and clearly right up there near the top, or even the team like the Clippers, who's 17-13 is really only a game up on the Mavericks. Same in the loss column, only three back in the loss column of all those other those teams kind of down there in the back end of the conference standings. But I don't know, it's just the Clippers seem like they're there. I feel, I guess if I were to say which one team I feel is like more for real, it'd probably be the Clippers. And I don't necessarily know why I would feel that way. I think I like the Mavericks roster more. I certainly like it more in the long term. But there's just like, you know, last year the Clippers, everybody thought they weren't going to be very good, and then they challenged for a playoff spot all the way down to the end of the year. I mean, they're dealing with some injuries as well. Lou Williams has been out. Luke Mbamute has been out. So they're not at full strength, but the guy they do have at full strength is Danilo Gallinari, and he is looking a lot like the Gallo of old. I mean, Gallo has played very, very strongly for the Clippers. He's given them over 18 points a game. He's given them five or six boards. You know, a couple assists. He's shooting 45% from three-point land, which is obviously phenomenal. We know what he can do from the free throw line. He's nearly 92% there. He's getting almost six attempts a game. So Gallo is back to, you know, what you expect Gallo to be, which is kind of like that nice number two, number three type of guy on your team. And it's working well because they also have Tobias Harris, who's kind of a similar skill set kind of guy. Another guy who's shooting over 40% from three. Another guy who's an excellent, you know, shooter all around, playmaker, scorer. And he leads the team in scoring. And between those two kind of options, that kind of two-headed monster out on the wings that they have, both those guys have the ability to play, you know, play both forward spots, mix it up a bit. That has just really been an effective combo for them, and it's working for them. And as long as it stays healthy, I don't know. I just believe in it. And I know, like, the thing that's hard to believe in is, will Gallo stay healthy? Because he's always seemed to struggle with that. But you know, I mean, it's just there's I don't think there's anything you can do other than just play the hand you're dealt. And so in terms of this right now, he's healthy. So you got to look at it from the viewpoint of he's going to be healthy. And as long as he is, I just think the Clippers, I like that group. They remind me a lot of the teams, kind of like the 2013 Nuggets and then the Atlanta Hawks a few years after that, who did it really well. But a team who's really just a collection of really good players, multiple players who can score the basketball, can play make for themselves and for others. Nobody really grabs at you as the overwhelming like star player of the team, but they're just a collection of really good good complementary pieces. They've got a good coach behind them, and all that together, you know, you can get a playoff squad out of that. You can get playoff series wins out of that. I don't think you can get to the finals with that formula, but I think the Clippers are a team that you certainly have to take seriously. And the Mavericks, the reason I would say the Mavericks maybe I take a little less seriously is because A, we've seen the like I said, how close the Western Conference is in terms of seeds, you know, 14 through seeds one, really. When you think about it, the Nuggets are currently in the one seed, but they are actually what is it? So the Nuggets are 20-9. That would put them only eight up in the loss column on the team that is currently in second to last place in the Western Conference. Like, that's what's crazy about the West. It's the Suns are out. Okay, the Suns are garbage. They won three in a row, but they're garbage. Everybody else could be in the playoffs. Every other single team in the West has a shot at making the playoffs. There's only three other teams in the West that are under 500, and the Jazz are currently the furthest under 500 of those three teams at 14-17. So that's how crazy it is there. And the 14th seed right now, the Jazz are 2.5 games back of being in the playoffs. So that when you have it so dense and tight like that, and then you have a team like Dallas, who's, you know, Luka Doncic is their leading scorer. He's been the revelation for them that some of us, myself, expected. And I'm not gonna pat my back on that. Let's be honest. A lot of people had Luka Doncic being pretty good this year. I'm not the progeny that you might think. They are prodigy. Whichever one. They're relying heavily on Luka. They're relying heavily on Dennis Smith Jr., obviously the second year point guard. They've got some good vets, you know, in Harrison Barnes. He's really played well for them. Obviously they still have Dirk, though he hasn't played very much. They have whatever DeAndre Jordan's doing. I'm not sure if you can call it basketball, but they have him there as well. So they've got some vets. Like I said, DeAndre probably not a very good vet to point to. I don't know that he's got a very good presence for the team right now. So there's some stuff around there, you know. I mean, obviously, I mean Harrison Barnes has won a championship, right? DeAndre Jordan has been to the playoffs plenty of years. JJ Barea has won a championship. They still got my man Devin Harris is over there as well. They've got that voices in the locker room, but voices in the locker room is one thing. When you're on the court, the guy, you know, they're not relying on Dirk anymore, obviously, to be their leader on the court. They're not relying on Devin Harris. They're not relying on JJ Barea. Those are bench guys. Like I said, Dirk really hasn't even played this season. They're relying for on-court, the production is coming out of Luka Doncic. It's coming out of Dennis Smith, Harrison Barnes. Yes, you know, you got Dorian Finney-Smith, those kind of guys. Jalen Brunson has got a little bit of time with the team as well. They're rookie, I believe, or he might not be a rookie. I think he might be a second-year guy. But, you know, they've got a lot of production coming from guys who are very young. And when you have that, and when you have the standings as tight as they are, I trust the team like that less, because I think the young guys are more prone to getting into a downswing and they'll have a harder time pulling themselves out of it than a team like the Clippers, who, like I said, I mean, they're relying on Danilo Gallinari, Tobias Harris, they're relying on Lou Williams, who's been a little bit hurt, as we were saying, you know, Patrick Beverley. They're the big producers for the Clippers are veteran guys. So you know that, like, they know how to weather the storm over a season and deal with success when they're having it, deal with coming off that success and maybe having a little bit of a downturn and being able to turn that back around. They know all of those things, whereas I don't necessarily trust that the Mavericks do. So that's why I think maybe I don't trust them quite as much. But I will say this, man, I think Luka Doncic, I've always said this, I mean, he's my pick for rookie of the year. I thought it was crazy. I thought people were nuts. The Phoenix Suns were nuts. The Sacramento Kings were nuts. Every single team that passed on Luka Doncic was nuts. He is the clear best prospect in this rookie class. He was clearly the player who was already the best player. And then you add in the fact that what he did in EuroLeague was so impressive that it was like there was clearly I don't understand how people like try to talk themselves out of it with Doncic, because, you know, he's a European guy. Oh, we've seen this before, especially in Denver. I think we really get that vibe in Denver, because we really were the ones, the guinea pigs for the whole kind of European movement for a while there. We were the ones who took the Rentsiuses and the Skittish Vilis and saw that just blow up spectacularly in our faces. So I think especially in Denver, there's sort of this kind of anti-European players coming over to the NBA sentiment, just because we've had our fair share of the busts and some of the biggest busts that we've seen during that movement. But that was a long time ago. I mean, this is not the day of Rentsius. This is where nobody even sees the guy play, you know, and they draft him. This is not the day of what was it, Darko Milicic? I think the story was that basically he had like one workout and everybody was super awed by this one workout, and then that's what put him up into the number two overall spot in the draft. You know, those days are gone. There's this thing called the internet that is really taken off, and Twitter and YouTube, and there's teams have understood now that the leagues in Europe have grown and have become much better over the past quarter century, and are have legit basketball talent, and a lot of the talent they're going up against in Europe is legit basketball talent, some of which is players who have spent time in the NBA themselves already, and these are the guys that they're playing day in and day out. Like, it's not a huge mystery drafting a guy from overseas anymore. It's just not. It's fairly good. You're easy to scout them. It's we find that you find diamonds in the rough like Nikola Jokic because you go over there and you scout these guys and you catch on to something. Luka Doncic, you didn't have to have any secret to catch on to. The guy was the EuroLeague MVP. He led Real Madrid to the EuroLeague championship. He won the Euro Cup with Slovenia. With Slovenia, okay, not Spain, not Serbia. I mean Slovenia, which is a decent team in the international spectrum, but by no means has ever been considered a powerhouse. He was the leading force behind that team winning Euro Cup. He wins Euro League. He won every single freaking award you can win at the height of European basketball. And people still wanted to act like he wasn't going to be this good. It's absolutely insane to me. I got off into a bit of a Luka Doncic rant there. But, this guy is legit. And so he's going to go through some growing pains playing now in this level of the NBA. But he put up 28 points just the other night. He is the real deal. He is a guy that the Nuggets, Torrey Craig, he's been up against Kawhi Leonard. He's been up against Russell Westbrook. It doesn't get really much easier for him. He's now got the next generation of great players coming at him, or one of them with Luka Doncic. I really believe that. I really believe Luka Doncic is going to be a Hall of Fame player. He's going to be we're going to look back at him as one of the best players to play in the NBA. I think that's how good this guy is. I'm excited to watch it, so I'm really excited to see this game tonight. But Torrey Craig is going to be tasked with stopping that, and that's why you can't overlook this Dallas team anymore. They've got a new, younger core led by a very, very, very talented prospect who's not afraid of this game, who is ready to step in. I mean, he stepped in. He's averaging 18 points, nearly 7 boards, almost 5 assists. He's a guy who is going to continue to play at a very high level, even though he's playing against much tougher competition, because he's coming from probably the second best league behind the NBA in the entire world. You might be able to argue, some people will argue like the G League is better than the Euro League. I wouldn't. But clearly, there's nobody like Luka Doncic playing in the G League. There's a reason why there are a bunch of European guys get drafted higher than G League guys. Because G League, never mind. I'm getting off topic again here. But, this team is on the rise, and they're going to be a problem to deal with. And the reason they're going to be a problem is because they've got Luka Doncic, because they've got Dennis Smith, they've got young, talented players who are going to be with them for a long time and make them very good for a long time. So Denver can't overlook this. It's a tough game because it's the closing. You're closing out your homestand. You've played 3 very solid teams in the Grizzlies, the Thunder, and the Raptors. You won all those games. You're still fighting through all of the injuries, but this is a team that they've got the potential 100% to beat you. So you've got to be prepared tonight against Dallas. You've got to be able to overcome that, and you're gonna be disadvantaged. You're not gonna have Juancho Hernangómez. That's gonna be a tough battle to overcome. And you're gonna like I said, Torrey Craig, man, this is a big game for him. This is a really big game, and potentially, I still don't have any confirmation on this, on Jared Vanderbilt. I'll tell you guys right now, I'm probably leaning, I would say I'm about 75% that yes, this is accurate, that Jared Vanderbilt is a game time decision tonight. My guess is, we were trying to confirm with PR. I haven't heard back from Mr. Mottas or Mr. Vogt. Those guys are insiders. So we're trying to get PR to confirm that the report is accurate. But they updated it, like I said, yesterday, the same time they updated Juancho and added him to the thing. They also continue to extend Will Barton and Isaiah Thomas's timelines. Those guys are now December 22nd, December 23rd. So don't read too much into that. They only just pushed it back another week. They tend to been doing that. And then, but for whatever reason, they did not push back Jared Vanderbilt. They kept him at as a game time decision for tonight. Now, this is the other key thing to notice here is Gary Harris was hurt against the Toronto Raptors. Not this game, of course, that we've been talking about, but the one 2 weeks ago, just yesterday. So the way that injury exception that they've got Nick Young signed under right now works is that basically you've got to have 4 or more players who are out at least 2 weeks to qualify. Up until this point, the Nuggets have been able to do that with Jared Vanderbilt, Michael Porter Jr., Will Barton, and Isaiah Thomas. Those have been their four. But if you bring Jared Vanderbilt back, he would no longer qualify, which means you'd only have three. However, Gary Harris now, as of today, because he got injured 2 weeks ago yesterday, so as of today, he's officially been out for 2 weeks. So that would actually, he would still, Nick Young would still qualify for the hardship exception because they now have Gary Harris out. So that, like I said, I'm about 75%. We'll try and get this confirmed. Stick close to Mr. Mahrez and Mr. Vogt on their Twitter feeds. Those guys will be getting that confirmed here. I imagine a shoot around, which should take place not too long. Might even be taking place as you guys are listening to this. So stick that. But it'll be interesting to see if Wancho can't go. You would think maybe Vanderbilt will get some minutes. I don't know. It's crazy. Seems like they're rushing back. Because I don't know if he's... I know he's been close to getting cleared. I do know that. But it's like, I don't think we've ever seen a report that he participated in a full practice. Maybe he did yesterday, you know, or something like that. But usually coach likes to see guys go through a full practice before he before he'll put them out there. But something to watch for, certainly. And if they don't have Wancho, then obviously Torrey Craig's going to have to step up. And if JV's got to play, then, you know, it's not going to be – they're not certainly not going to ease him into it, man. They're gonna throw him out there. He makes a lot of sense. You know, a guy like that would be helpful against Luka Doncic, against a Harrison Barnes. So I'm curious. I'm really curious. It's going to be fun to watch. Let's not stick here too long, I guess. The last thing I'll point on this, and then we'll let you guys get out of here. Nikola Jokic, we talked about it. We talked about it earlier about how big this is for him, this time period right now, about him becoming, like, taking that next step, that really he's becoming this MVP candidate. He's walking to that light. There's a huge advantage for Nikola tonight, but it's going to be – he's going to have to extend his comfort level a little bit, because if there's one thing that Nikola really hasn't, I think, looked comfortable doing this season, it's been shooting the three-point ball. He's under 30%, I believe. He hasn't had, you know, what that type of year that we've expected. We know he can shoot it from out there. He was nearly a 40% shooter last season from three-pointers. So you figure he'll turn it around, but Nikola's a guy, when he knows, he's very in tune to his shooting as well, right? So he knows, like, hey, if this shot's not falling for me, I'm not going to shoot it. I'm just going to let play make for others and not worry about it. Maybe get some baskets around the rim, maybe get to the free throw line, get points that way. He's very, very good at, you know, taking what's given to him. Tonight, the three-point ball is going to be given to him. The fact of the matter is DeAndre Jordan, I mean, if you haven't been following this, DeAndre Jordan is like, he's just disinterested. I mean, he's checked out. It's weird, too, because he just signed over there in Dallas, but he doesn't seem to really care very much. He's not going to close out on a three-point shooter at the three-point line. He just doesn't care. It's funny. He'll stand there and watch. I mean, he really has been atrocious. So that's where they need Jokic tonight to be at his best. They need him to be shooting the ball. They need him to be stretching the floor. You want to get DeAndre Jordan out of the paint no matter what. Even with him looking disinterested like he is, he's still a phenomenal rim protector when he wants to be. So you need to keep him out of the paint. That's how you want to be most effective when attacking this Dallas defense. Jokic has got to step up to that. He's got to, tonight, really step up to the shooting portion of it. I think he's going to need to hit, you know, 3-4 three-pointers and really make Jordan extend his defense out to the three-point line. Because if he's going to miss those shots, and then if he misses a couple and then he doesn't want to shoot anymore, that's really playing in right into Dallas, what Dallas wants to do, and they can't have that. Like I said, the Nuggets really cannot overlook this team. So, all right, guys, I think we'll go ahead and wrap it up right there. So make sure you follow me on Twitter. I'm at Zach Mikosh, at Pickaxe Pundits, at Denver Stiffs, at SB Nation, all that good stuff. We're on Instagram at The Denver Stiffs, also on Facebook. Give us a follow and a like, and subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher. I don't know where else people people listen to podcasts, wherever you guys are getting this podcast. Just make sure you're subscribed to the feed, leave a rating and a review. We would definitely appreciate that. All right, everybody, we will talk to you next week.